The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, friends. Thank you for once again joining me on the program here, Afternoons with Mike, on the Shepherd Radio Network. Last November, I had a chance to interview a guy that had been recommended to us by our good friend Pete Alwinson over at The Forge. And Pete said, you've got to have this guy on. His name is Welton James, and he is a walking proverb. He's just got a bunch of them. And sure enough, so I had Welton on, and at that point, I think the book had already been written, but yes, had not been published yet. So officially, Welton James, welcome to my program.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be back.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, I loved having you here the first time and getting to talk over something that I don't believe is really common anymore. But there was a time that all of, like my grandparents' age, they used little sayings, you know, they became known as cliches.
Yes.
But it seems like this this new generation that we have around us now in this new millennium, that's not as prevalent anymore or common to find it anymore, where people will have little sayings that kind of help them get through their day or get through the task. I remember my mom told me something when I was a kid. She said, what's hard by the yard becomes a cinch by the inch.
Yes.
That's one of the sayings. And I remember hearing that, and I had to be in either upper elementary or early high school. And, you know, I never forgot that.
Yes.
Because we all tend to look at life in the big picture, and we forget that we need to not forget that there's a task before us and a God who cares about us, who's only given us as much as we can handle. And we have the promise that that we're going to make it.
Absolutely.
If we're a believer, we can go to the Lord and that he will help us get through all of these things. But those little sayings kind of help us. So let's go back for those that did not hear your first interview. Tell me a little bit, first of all, about yourself and where you were born and raised and how you came to know the Lord.
Well, basically, we started with where I was born. I was born in Affinity, West Virginia, which is a coal camp. My father was a coal miner, and I was born in a one-room coal mining kind of shack. Everything was owned by the coal company, the Lilybrook Coal Company, and you got your pick, your shovel, your food, your housing, all came from the owner of the coal company. You were paid in scrip, which was similar to a subway token, only redeemable at the company store.
Oh, my goodness.
And on payday, you got your scrip, and you cashed it in. Paid your bill, and you work 6 days. You made $2 a day. You made $12, but when it's time to cash out, you find out you owed $14. And so it was an ongoing process. Fortunately, my mother, not from West Virginia, had a completely different vision for our family. She was able to sneak off and do what they call day's work. And the person that she cleaned houses for owned a few. So my mother said, I'll take half the money and I'll leave half the money on account. And at some point, when one of these places become available, we're going to move out of that coal mining neighborhood. And she was able eventually to get us out of that.
Now, I remember we talked about this thing about script and how that when you were paid with that and then you cash out, as you said, you're actually indebted.
Yes.
So why was that? How did that work? Was that like a tax that was added that you didn't realize?
It was just a continuous process where the coal mining owner had his own form of accounting.
It sounds like it.
But everything that everything you needed to exist on was provided by the coal company. So as a result, your pay was never going to equal or be greater than your debt.
So in a real way, then, that could be in itself a motivation to keep you there.
Absolutely.
Because if you're not there, If you start to leave, then you're going to be hit with a tab of what you owe, and that might be a discouragement to leave.
It was a feudal system. It was all designed to just keep everything self-contained there at the in the coal camp. I mean, eventually they let the unions, wars, the coal mining owner had his own set of men with rifles, picks, handles. So the history of the coal fields mm-hmm. and the wars in the coal fields is quite extensive in America. Very few people know about that. But, you know, the government had to get involved. It was a major, major event in our history. One of the things that was very unique, though, the coal mine was one of the first integrated work areas, because when everybody went into the coal mine, there was no segregation inside the mine. Now, what would happen is for key jobs, the segregation did take place. Mm. But everybody went in that hole together. Everybody was subject to the same natural forces.
And, you know, my grandfather did that. He worked in the coal mines in Kentucky.
Okay.
And he came down with his thing called black lung disease. And it caused him to be, I guess at that point, the government had a program of disability. And basically he was... given a disability and released and moved his family from that part of the area to Indiana. And that's how we got here. That's okay. How I became a Hoosier.
Okay.
I was born into Evansville, Indiana. But my grandfather, you know, it's amazing. I never once in all the years that I knew him, I grew up in my earliest remembrances with him living next door to us, never heard him complain. So people of the generation that worked as hard as what you and your family did, I know how difficult that had to be, but they were not complainers. They were not whiners. They were out there doing the work. They were getting it done every day.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. When I grew up, I didn't know I was poor because everybody was
right.
In pretty much in the same economic situation. People worked. One of the things I was talking to somebody earlier today, one of the things, the gifts that my father gave me was he taught me how to work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We didn't have to spend a lot of time on why, but he taught me how to work because he let me know that if I knew how to work, that I would always be able to take care of myself, regardless of my size or intellect,
mm-hmm.
but to know how to work. And, you know, that's something that's really not being passed on today the way it was before, the actual how. To take step by step, to know when you're done, to know when it's completed, to know when it is excellent.
Now, I think that's the word that I was getting ready to say. It's one thing to do work. It's another thing to try to aim for excellence in that work.
Absolutely.
And that is a lost art.
Yes.
Or at least a rare art anymore. I shouldn't say lost because it's still there.
Yes.
But it's not as commonplace to find a person or a group of people to have a work ethic like what your parents would have had.
You know, you mentioned something earlier about grandma passing some things on. And my book has a lot to do with kinds of things that grandma passed on to the children.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was growing up, there were no senior assisted living facilities. When grandma got old and couldn't take care of herself, she moved in with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so she spent time with the kids because, you know, mom had things to do. And she'd been listening to grandma all her life. But the kids, most would run away from grandma because they knew that once grandma got a hold of you, you were going to be there for quite a while.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah. And plus, you're going to get called by your brother's name 15 times and you're going to hear the same story again and again. But, you know, later on in life, I realized that I was channeling my grandma, the things that she taught me and the way in which she taught me. You know, those things became a part of my language. It was a vocal thing that was passed on. It wasn't a visual.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, things are being passed on visually through the internet. And so this idea of knowing, the word has changed. The concept has changed. To know something doesn't mean that you have to experience it anymore. All it means is that you saw it and you collected some information, but you don't really know it. You know more about it.
That's right.
Okay.
I think, you know, that is a common problem that we all have. I can say that there have been times that I've gotten so familiar over something that I've seen virtually.
Yes.
That I've seen pictures of on the internet or during research. And sometimes when you think back on that, it's very possible if you've been to that place before to confuse what you saw when you were literally there and what you learned about it when you were reading about it virtually. And that can happen. So I think more and more it is important to really keep real things real. And that's what it sounds like you had. I really love that expression that you said earlier. You did not know you were poor. You did not have the perception that you were without. And that's to the commendation of your parents, that they raised you in such a way that they shielded the pressures and the stresses, which we know were there. They shielded those from you in a way that you were able to enjoy your life.
Absolutely. Our value was not based on our income. Okay. It was based on our values, our morals, and the practices that we kept.
Mm-hmm.
An example, we always had two sets of clothes. Okay. One set was only worn on Sunday. Okay. One was worn during the week, but to school. But even that set of clothes, there was a subset. At 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, you would come in and you would take your bath. Well, once you took your bath, you could then put on the clothes that you were going to wear the next day, but you couldn't play in them. You could only sit on the porch. So this idea of being clean, the house being clean, everybody eating dinner together, wasn't about what you had. one funny story I can remember, my mother was such a classy lady. She was so classy that people older than her would call her Mrs. James. One day I said to Mom, I don't want any more beans. And she said, why? I said, because JJ, my friend, told me that beans were for poor folks. She said, no, baby, poor folks ain't got no beans.
Oh, that's a turnaround that you just would not have expected. And that's the brilliant thing about these Weltonisms that you've come up with. It is ancient wisdom for modern problems.
Yes.
And, you know, Welton, why I was drawn to your concept and this book that I heard about last November was the fact that if there's ever a time and there's ever a day that we need wisdom, it's today. And even the problems that 2020 brought us, we're begging, we're thirsting. I think of the scriptures in Psalms that talks about like Psalm 27, where David says, there's one thing that I need, and that is to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord. And, you know, that recognition that we need something that comes from God, it doesn't matter. It's going to come through people most of the time. It's just like you came through your grandmother.
Absolutely.
But it's still initiating from God. It's coming from the Lord. And we need that. We are thirsting for that more than we realize.
Yeah. You know, wisdom does not come from man. You know, one of the things that not only was my grandmother in my house, but when I went to visit my friends, their grandmothers were at their house as well. In fact, we had a concept, you know, you had mom, her mother, and her mother's mother quite often in the same house. And we'd be big mama and little mama.
Now, see, we've heard that, and probably a lot of people who are listening to us today can relate to that as well. That
Absolutely.
They had nicknames for the generations that's there. But in America, especially with people moving, becoming much more mobile in their life and jobs and careers becoming preeminent over family, over where they were born, the area in which they were. This kind of a multi-generational lifestyle has really gone by the wayside in many cases.
Yes. And so one of the things that as I would say things to people in my career, I worked at Tropicana Hotel Casino in Atlantic City. And my responsibility was the customer service for the company. I was the position was called Executive Director of Quality Assurance. And part of that was to have seminars and learning experiences for all the employees. I had a team of what we call TROP trainers. I would meet with them every quarter. They would then meet with their line employees.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also meet with the executive team a couple of times a year. And as I describe my lessons, they would laugh and say, where'd you get that expression from? And then it became common. It would be known as Weltonisms.
Yeah.
And they would say, oh, there goes another Weltonism. Now, my godmother says, you say these things so often, you don't even recognize you're doing it. So take a pen and pad, keep it in your pocket. And when you say one of these things, write it down and take it home, put it in the box. One day you'll have enough for a book. And sure enough, I did an interview with Reverend Pete. And at the end of that interview, he said, you should write a book. I said, sir, I've been writing that book for 30 years.
He said, the book's mostly written already.
He said, but I have a publisher. I said, wow. Now, nobody's ever said that to me before. And sure enough, we connected with Dave Welday.
Yes.
And he said, just send me what you have. And I sent it to him. He says, this is what we can run with. Absolutely.
Yeah, Dave's been on this show a couple of times, and he really does delight in looking for people just like you who have that story. And what I just love doing this program so much for Welton is that I get to talk with people like you. And I find that, you know, a lot of times people will say, I did not realize that my story was like ready for radio, but most people really do have a story that is in their life. Not everyone is going to be fitted to, a big crowd or maybe to write a book on their life, like what you've done with this Weltonisms, but every person has a story.
Yes.
Every person's story is important. And every person's story, if they're a believer, was given to them by Almighty God.
Absolutely. Sometimes all we need is a guide. And in the case of Dave, for example, before we even moved anywhere, we had a deep conversation as to my why. Why do you want to write this book?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you really want to say? And I realized what I really wanted to say was that this stuff is important to pass on to each generation. Our children and our children's children need to hear this. It has to do with God is in there, and it has to do with self-responsibility. And so he helped me put my why together, and we got this done. We had to clean up a few things now because, you know, Grandma, sometimes she was quite explicit, you know.
Well, I wanted to talk about her for a moment, so let's do that real quick before our first break. Tell us the faith of your grandma. Was that... was that a rooted and like a based on her relationship with the Lord that these wisdom items started coming to you?
You know, one, there's a word called colloquialism, okay, relating to the fact that not only my grandmom was using these kinds of ways to communicate, but all the grandmoms were. It became part of the West Virginia lexicon. People talk like that, you know, and sometimes you hear people say, well, you talk funny, but again, if they needed to get you a message, they could just tell you straight up, but, that didn't last too long, but they could put it in a narrative of some kind, like there's a whole book in the Bible like that in Proverbs. But if they put it to you in a narrative, you would remember that. Something as simple as, son, whether a job be big or small, now do it right or not at all. Well, that kind of thing would stick with you.
It does. And especially when you add a little rhyme like what you did right there, it almost becomes like a little song that you never forget.
Yeah. Now, Grandma was one of those old rugged cross kind of Christian. She usually was humming a spiritual most of the day. Okay. And now sometimes you just get straight up, give you a Bible story, you know, especially if you had done something a little wrong or whatever, she felt as though you may be going in the wrong way, or she saw you spending time with the wrong kid. Now she didn't know the kid, but there was something, intuition. Yeah.
That discernment was kicking in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I can remember telling me, who's that boy there? I said, well, that's Richie. She said, what's his last name? I said, Banks. You know, we don't want no Banks around here. So, well, you know, Richie's a good kid.
Banks are close.
Right. Yeah, so it was like, nah, that family's thieves. Okay. So.
Yeah, they just tell it straight up. And I said, yeah. Well,
you know, but Richie's not a thief. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be.
Oh, my goodness. You know?
But I mean, that's just the way it was. They had a sense, and they were able to act on what it is that they felt. Again, trying again to continue to follow what they believe that Christ would want them to communicate to us.
Wow. What a heritage you have, Welton. Weltonisms is the name of Welton James' book, and the byline is Ancient Wisdom for Modern Problems. We're going to be reading some of those and kind of maybe get the backstory on where some of them came from when we return. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to The Shepherd. Here in the studio with Welton James, who is an author. Now, we haven't talked about the fact that you're also, I mean, you're not, you don't write books for a living. You're a catering manager in the area. Tell us just a little bit about that.
I work for a Mexican restaurant, and I supervise the catering operation. You can imagine that we've suffered quite a bit from that part of the operation. Just to give you an idea, we're probably lost over $500,000 just mm-hmm. from that particular operation. People are not getting together in groups of 20 to have meetings. It will come back. It will come back a little different, but we're looking probably in the third quarter before we get an uptick in that area.
So basically, you know, you think about all meetings have been affected by COVID-19, and especially, I guess, many of us don't really impact or think about the impact that that has on all the ripple down places like catering, and I would even think dry cleaning stores that would be normally dry cleaning all of the tablecloths that's involved with a banquet, and just every other person, all the servers that are involved in banquets. It's a sweeping thing that's happened to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, again, I one of my quotes is, you know, my rearview mirror is smaller than my windshield.
Now, see, I like that, man. This is why I like you, Welton. That's great.
So, yeah, we have to spend time looking through the windshield. Okay. Occasionally you have to check your rearview mirror, but you can't drive.
You can't drive looking backwards. I wouldn't recommend it, folks.
Not at all.
I remember Mac Davis wrote a song years ago called Lubbock in My Rear View Mirror.
Yeah.
And he said, I thought happiness was Lubbock in my rear view mirror. That's what it was. And happiness is in the windshield, not in the rear view mirror.
Absolutely.
And that is really good. Yeah. Now, before we again get into the book, we've both gone through some eye issues lately. I know that I had this thing called a torn retina that just came out of the blue. Wasn't injured that I knew of in any way that caused it, but surgery in one day, and I get checked on that again next Monday. And then I find out that you've had a kind of like the retina's in the back part. My problem is in the back part of my eye on the inside. You've had an issue on the outside of your eye in the front with your cornea. So how are you doing now?
I'm doing great, actually. I am doing great. Very optimistic. Great doctor skill, but more importantly, God's will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a battle that I've been having since I was in the third grade. I have traumatic glaucoma. I was hit by a baseball bat in the third grade, and my glaucoma, the inability of the eye to make fluid and let that fluid pass out, the eye retains that fluid inside the eye, creates pressure inside the eye, and that's glaucoma. So I've been battling that since I was in the third grade. Mm. I've had about 6 or 7 different surgeries on this left eye. And because of the pressure over a long period of time, it destroyed my cornea. And the cornea is like the windshield of the eye. And so the cornea was cloudy. And 15 months ago, I had a cornea transplant. And unfortunately, I think I got the transplant out of a heathen. Okay. It wouldn't let me see God's glory.
That's right. And it didn't stick.
And it didn't stay. And so last week we had another cornea transplant, and hopefully we got a Christian cornea this time.
Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with a different form of glaucoma in 2019.
Okay.
And it's normal tension, but I mean, it's interesting to see. And I know one of the problems that all glaucoma, those of you out there listening that have this, one of the things that we all fight that have it is dry eyes.
Yes.
And the cornea obviously is what is the face of your eye. And it's on that outside. It's very important. So we got to keep our vision, got to keep it healthy, and you got to keep those eyes moistened.
Yes.
and watch those pressures. Because in my case, when I'd have an eye exam, my pressures were all normal. And so the indicator wasn't initially there for a problem. But fortunately, it was discovered that I had it nonetheless. And so, yeah, it's
amazing how many things with people used to go blind with,
yeah,
are now quite treatable. But again, it's hard for the doctor to treat it unless you're actually going to get eye exam. So it's important for people to have your children eyes checked.
You know, the grace of God, it just opens things like that up, because that's exactly what happened in my case. I was being examined for another issue, and it was during that examination that they spotted the telltale signs of glaucoma.
Sure enough.
And so that's exactly right. I mean, having routine exams, and folks, that's true not only about our eyes, about other things. I really encourage us as we get older, we got to remember that we've got to take care of ourselves. And I think a lot of people are just out there acting like we're going to live forever, and we're not going to live forever.
Absolutely.
And we do want our upper years to be as healthy as they can be. And so that's what that's all about. So thank you for sharing that. And let's all be praying for Welton.
But thank
that,
you.
This,
and you as well.
Well, thank you. That these eye issues will kind of fall in line with them, with the will of the Lord, and that we'll be able to continue to see, because vision is very important. I tell you what, when I had that corrections, the surgery that corrected that retinal tear, and when they pulled that lens off my eye after that laser for a few minutes, I was completely blind in that eye.
Yes.
Could not see at all. I mean, nothing. It was black. And I had my first moment of an eye-open blackness experience in my life.
Yeah.
It was not fun.
Yeah. My left eye, it's like looking through wax paper. And hopefully people are old enough to remember wax paper.
Mm-hmm.
But it's blurry. But it's getting better.
Yeah, well,
it's getting better.
We're praying for you, man. All right. In the book, here it is, Weltonisms. And first of all, just to say, Dave and the guys over at his team really did a wonderful job on the cover. It's gorgeous. And Higher Life Publishing and Marketing is Dave Wellday's company. It's just very well done, and the attractive graphics on your cover. That's got to be exciting for you to see a book that not only is a book, but it looks as good as this one does.
I'm going to tell you, when God is ready to have something done, then it gets done beyond your wildest dreams. 30 years, I talked about doing this book. And when it all came together, it just exceeded anything that I could ever hope. First of all, the book looks good. And the way it was laid out is just absolutely wonderful. The second part is the people that I have been able to touch and have been able to touch me to recall things that we experienced 30 years ago. This has been such a wonderful thing for people to share with me some of the experiences that I've long forgotten. One of the things I say is that I used to say that I have a great memory. I don't know where I put it. Okay. But then I remembered I gave my memory to my friends. So I have to keep my friends close to me.
Oh, my goodness. See again. I've never heard that one before, but I like it. Now, I think I would be correct in this assumption, and you let me know if I am, that behind most of these, if not all of them, behind most of them, there's probably a story that instantly would float up to your mind about where that originated.
In some cases, yes, but I'd have to get one of my friends to tell me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember, I gave my memory to my friends.
Okay. So my assumption was wrong.
Yeah. But some of them are quite poignant. Okay. The book originally was supposed to be called You Trust Your Mother, But You Still Count Your Change.
Well, now, see, that's your first one. I was going to ask you about it.
That's the first one. Okay. But in my mind, that was going to be the title of the book. But the marketing team said, imagine that book sitting in Barnes & Noble. Somebody walked by and saw it. They would not know what the book was about. Okay. And so that's why we decided to change the title to connect better with what was actually in the book.
Okay. So now let's go on into that one, since you brought it up. You trust your mother, but you still count your change.
Right.
Obviously an implication that you You just want to be double checking everything that's in your pocket there.
You are ultimately responsible. Imagine a little boy going to the store at a time when they didn't have a register tape. And he bought the bread, he put the change in his hand, and he ran back home. And when he gave the change to his mother, it was the wrong change. And he ran back to the store, and the person at the store said, no, I gave you the right change. Now, the little boy's crying. He's going home. He's going to get a spanking because he knows he didn't lose any change. He had his hand tight the whole time. When he got home, his mother said, didn't you count it? And he said, no, I trusted her. And the mom looked him in his eyes and said, son, you trust your mother, but you still count your change.
That is so great. That is so great.
So that sets the tone for the book. Ultimately, you are responsible for you.
That's awesome, Wilson. Yeah. Welton. Experience gives you the test first and the lesson later.
Absolutely.
Now, tell me about that one.
Well, you know, another thing in the book, it says, experience is a great teacher, especially when it's someone else's, you know, but that's what happens with experience. We don't always get the lesson ahead of time. You hear people say we graduated from the school of hard knocks, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah.
All of their experiences later, they got the lesson. You know, sometimes you don't get the lesson to much, much later. You know, leaders have scars.
You know, I had just recently a conversation with, I think it was Doug Prusak and I were talking, and we were talking about testimonies and the fact that you're basically, your testimony, it starts off with those first four letters, which is test.
That's right. You can't have a testimony without a test.
Yeah. And so basically, life is a test, my friends, yes, and you better be ready for it because we're going to have it, and everyone has a testimony. But I think it's so wonderful to realize that the Bible talks about that we overcome them by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. So these tests that happen, that we will later learn the lesson, but they're still important because the tests, it's everything from the context. It's everything from the direction. It's everything from the truth that we're going to need to know to live our lives successfully. And that test puts us there, and then we learn the whole big picture lesson later.
Yes. And here's the thing. You know, for instance, people have a tendency to say that when God closes a door, he'll open a window. And I don't believe that. You know, if God wanted a window open, he wouldn't have had to close the door. Sometimes when God closes the door, he's closing a door. Period.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to try to figure out what's next or assume that because he closed the door, he's going to open a window. No, he's going to leave the window closed, and sometimes he's going to close the door as well.
But we just don't like to hear it that way, do we?
No.
we want to find a way to circumvent what God is doing.
And we want to always try to figure out what he's doing. And that's just not true. You know, one of the things I put in the book is God never pretends to be the devil. However, the devil pretends many things.
Oh. Welton, I love that one. Oh, my goodness. Again, what I like about the way you've written these is that I'm one that when I'm reading something, I find that I'm already figuring out or trying to figure out an expectation of how that is going to end or how this scenario. And to me, it's altogether refreshing and delightful when you get to the last line of it and it, boom, it hits you in a different way. And you realize they were taking you down one road and you thought it was going to end like that, but boom, you're hit from the rear with a new thought and a new idea. And it's awesome.
How's this one? The person out front is not always the leader. Sometimes he's the one being chased.
I like it. I like it.
But some are things to give you some real thought about.
Mm-hmm.
If the world only had smart people, surely there would be an absence of kindness.
Okay, explain that now. Let's talk about that one.
Okay. We put a lot of emphasis on intelligence and smart, being smart, okay? But that's not what God puts his emphasis on. Okay. God says without love, what does the other things even matter? Okay. And so as we pursue this idea of being the smartest and the most intelligent, then we miss the fact that we miss kindness. And so if the world was only had smart people, surely there would be an absence mm-hmm. of kindness.
Mm. And kindness is so important to us. You know, I'm just grateful that the Lord used kindness in calling us.
Yes.
And again, these things are, this book is not, it's not like tied down to where everything you're going to read is a direct inference or reference to the Bible. But you can see that your grandmom's and your parents' influence from the Word of God certainly guided a lot of these things
Absolutely.
That shaped you. And then the things that happened, you know, isn't it true that they're helping shape you into the way you thought is an indirect way as to then the way these things, you just started thinking this way.
Yes.
And that became a life, kind of almost a life direction for you.
It's hard to put into words the joy that was passed on through these words. They didn't spend a lot of time chastising you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the sayings is a person who's changed against his will is of the same opinion still. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you chastise someone, they focus on the chastisement. They focus on the attitude. They focus on the discomfort. However, if a message is given to them that has a nice ring to it,
yeah,
it could then resonate. It could stay. It could be carried on.
So basically, that chastisement did not really change that person's heart or their behavior, even though they might have gone along with it, nod their head, their heart. Direction is still the same.
Absolutely. When I used to teach customer service, one of the things we taught was that we don't discipline people. We redirect them.
Okay. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
My goodness. I mean, you could be finding yourself a new career here, buddy, and not just doing what you're doing with all of the banquet, the managing that you do, but you might find yourself to be a motivational speaker someplace here doing this.
Well, it's funny you say that because that's the book is actually a key. The book is not the door. The book is a key that opens the door to my next life. I got a birthday coming up. I'll be 74. Most of my friends who are 74 are looking for a place to go sit. I have new things to do, places to go, people to see, to meet. So in my former life as that executive director position, I had to do a lot of speaking. And since that time, I've done some speaking. I joined a John Maxwell team.
That's right. It's on this book, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Who is the foremost guru for leadership in America. He's a Christian. He's a pastor, and so I've done things on my own, but I didn't have my own curriculum, and so I joined a John Maxwell team, and I'm now qualified to do the John Maxwell books and so on, and I've done a few things, but I'm transitioning mm-hmm. At the Mexican restaurant. Slowly moving. I tell people they're retired. I'm halfway there. I'm tired.
There you go, friends.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about, man. Yeah. This guy, he's a walking fountain of wonderful wisdom. Here's one more before we take a break, and I got to talk about this. I already see my eyes are just going down this page, and I'm loving everything I'm seeing. But you may see farther from the top of a mountain, but you will touch nothing while there. Boy, what a great view.
Yeah.
What a reality that you can see something when you're on top of the mountain, but it's usually down in the valley when you're going to be close enough to it to actually embrace it.
Yeah. You know, we have this image of gurus going to sitting on the top of the mountain, and people climb up to the top of the mountain to go
trying to reach nirvana or something.
Yeah, but that's not how God deals with us.
Right.
You know, in fact, God waits until we're in the valley. then we have his full undivided attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's true. Yeah, I was listening to Paul Blair last night on The Shepherd, and he was talking about that very thing, and he was comparing what scenario causes you to pray the most and the hardest. Is it when you are drawn into your boss's office and he gives you a raise, or you're drawn into your boss's office and he lays you off?
Yeah.
So life can happen in either of those two directions. Which causes you to pray the most? And the truth of it is, we do poorly as humans when we're prospering.
Yes, we do.
We don't think we need God when everything's great.
Now, God doesn't usually disturb you at the party.
Okay. He disturbs you when you found out that you've got a sickness, or that your son is ill, or that you lost your job, or that your car broke down.
Yes.
He's talking to you then.
Absolutely. And we're willing to talk to him at that time. You know, the goal is can we go to him when things are not so bad?
Okay? I love it.
Yeah. Can we go to him on a regular basis?
And I would even add, can we be hungry for him in those times? That's my prayer.
Yeah.
So that's the way I was praying this morning, because I realize how when I was sick with COVID just 2 months ago or 2.5 months ago, it's funny how when you're down like that, everything becomes much more crystal clear and you get to feeling better. And those things that were as crystal clear before are not so much now.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I was praying about even this morning in my quiet time. Lord, help me to be as hungry for you when I'm not as desperate for you. That's a human prayer right there that I think all of us can relate to. I'm talking today to Welton James. Welton is an author of a new book, and he's also a speaker, as we've just heard. And this is a guy that I think you would want to know, my friends. If you've got somebody that you'd like to speak to your group, we'll give you that address coming up, so don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and I'm Mike Gillen, and we're here on the Shepherd Radio Network. We'll be right back. Having the time of my life today with Welton James, it's so much fun to get in here and to get to sit down and talk to somebody who has such a vast and interesting background in our wonderful language that we all use every day, and day in and day out we're talking, but very few times do we get an opportunity to really think about the value of what we talk about, the value of our words, the value that God has given us, and as to how those words direct us and how those words can actually inspire us. Sometimes we're given something from God and we don't realize that he's given us something that, like what you said earlier, it's a key. And it's a key that is going to unlock a future lock that is before us. We don't even maybe see that lock yet, but he's given you what you're going to need in that moment. And that's what happened to you. You said it was your godmother, right?
Yeah, my godmother said to me, she said, "You say these things so often, you don't recognize it. You need to take a pen and paper, keep it with you. And when one of these things come out, you need to write them down, take them home, put them in your box. One day you'll have enough for you'll have a book."
Now, did you realize at that time the discipline it would take to do that? Were you always that disciplined and ordered and maybe organized?
Not really. Not at all. But again, my godmother was just such a profound person that I took her advice.
And
I would
just
have my little pen and paper in my pocket. And a lot of times I would not remember. But again, these things just continue to pop up. And something happened the other night for the first time. One popped into my head that was just so bothersome, I actually had to get up and go write it down. And what popped in my head was, stop asking young people to lead us. Instead, teach them the ways of the elders in the hope that one day that they will be one.
Wow. That is profound, man.
But that one woke me up, and I actually had to go in the other room and actually write that one down.
You know, that's what a lot of songwriters do as well. There'll be an inspiration for something. And I think we are all leaky buckets in these things that God gives us. And we think, oh, I'll never forget that.
Yes.
But if you don't write them down, sometimes you do.
Yes.
And we think back about in the story in the book of Esther,
the king that was awakened in the night. And what does he do? He can't sleep. So he tells his servant to go get his book of Chronicles, basically his diary, his journal. And they start reading him to him what he had written, or what he had written and had directed it be written. And in so doing is reminded of something that actually was going to save the life of Mordecai. It's going to save the life. And that happened because of rereading something that had been written.
Yes.
That's powerful, my friend. Now, we got to do another couple of these Weltonisms. I keep getting your name wrong here. But this one is good in light of what we were talking about, our eyes. Vision is 20/20 hope. Now, we normally think about 2020, we think of it either being a 2020 vision, or we hear it expressed as 2020 hindsight, because when we look back on something, we can usually see more clearly. But now you say vision is 2020 hope.
Vision is a lot different than just seeing. Okay. Vision is actually seeing down the street, around the corner, around the bend, into the future, and so on. Vision is that not just simply telling what is coming attractions.
Mm-hmm.
In vision is hope. We don't usually refer to vision as foretelling of future tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
We think of vision as a promise, the ability to see where we're going. In fact, if you have a job and you get promoted, they expect your vision to change. They expect you to see the big picture. You then go into supervision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so vision and hope, or in my mind, are very closely connected.
You know, when we look at God, he is the giver of hope.
Yes, he is.
And I think about the definition I heard years ago about what hope is. It was the constant expectation of good.
Yes.
Because God is good.
Yes, he is.
And if he's given us the vision, it's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. Now, here's another one. A fist is a hand that is afraid.
All negative emotions are based in fear. If you show me any negative emotion and I start to pull back the layers like an onion, at the root of it is fear. Okay. So a fist, okay, it's just a hand that is afraid.
That's so good, brother. Oh, these are the kinds of things, my friends, that you can read at nighttime, maybe right before you go to sleep, and put this book down and be kind of thinking about it. And you might just have some wonderful, wonderful dreams that would point you to maybe one of the own expressions that God's going to give in you. Now, here's something I'm going to say that this has got to be from my friend Doug Prusak. Golf got its name because all of the other four-letter words were taken. Are you a golfer, Weldon?
I'm horrible.
Oh, well, hey, welcome to the club.
I'm horrible.
Yeah.
The owner of my company lives on a golf course and took me out with a bunch of other fellows to play golf. And I told him, I said, I'm not good at all. And he thought I was being modest. I was being accurate.
You were just telling it like it is.
This is where they have the Arnold Palmer golf tournament, okay, and Bay Hill. And so needless to say, he hasn't invited me back.
Well, I tell you what, I just recently got to play in that foursome with Doug and some other people on the board of Christian Help, and why they invited me, but we had a good time.
Excellent. I spent a lot of time with those guys.
Yeah.
In fact, the book, it just so happens that Christian Help is my charity of choice. So every book that's sold, actually, I make a contribution to Christian Help.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
I was able to recently be able to give them a check for $500.
Wow. So, that's tremendous.
Now, the book is in what is called pre-sale. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, and Books a Million. It's in pre-sale for shipping on April the 1st. But the book is available immediately through my website at weltonjames.com.
Weltonjames.com. Welton spelled W-E-L-T-O-N. Just basically the way it sounds. WeltonJames.com. And is it available in both hardcover and softcover?
There are a few hardcovers that are available, but primarily it's a softcover. $15 if it's gotten from my site. And once it goes on Amazon, it'll be like $15.95, all soft covers.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's going to be downloadable for those who have Kindles or like to read it electronically.
Yes, yes. And yeah. Probably the second book, I'll come back and explain what the first book was about. And wow. Then we'll put it on Audible.
Who did your artwork for you? Was that just a graphic guy at David's Place?
His whole team put that together. When they sent that, they sent me four different concepts, and that's the one I picked. The only thing I changed was instead of a regular four in hand tie on that light bulb, we changed it to a bow tie.
A bow tie, yeah.
Because you can see my headshot has the bow.
That's right. Yeah, you're a bow tie wearer all the time.
No.
Oh, but that's pretty cool. You look great with it, man. Okay. His picture's on the back of it. So this book, again, a shout out to Dave Welday. And his company is called Higher Life Publishing and Marketing, and their website is ahigherlife.com. And this book is just wonderful. One more here. We've got to find another one here. Let's see here. Death comes with the loss of hope. Rebirth happens when it is found.
Yes.
That's powerful.
Yeah. That's who I am. September the 15th, 1984, I felt as though my soul was leaving my body. I had spent 30 years drugs and alcohol. And on September the 15th, 1984, that was the day that changed my life. That was the day I didn't care who knew. I didn't care what I had to do, who I had to listen to. I reached out to God and basically said, if you are there, you know, please save me. Please. And he looked into my heart and he started to put people in my path, and I became willing. I became willing to listen. And in time, I became willing to listen to his voice and change my life. And so I'm another week, I'll be 74 years old. I'm starting something new at 74. That's the message. You know, hope is possible. Regardless of what age, regardless of what time it is in your life, you have to get outside of your own head. You have to have a reason why.
Yeah.
Okay. My reason why is that I glorify God in this book because the messages are all designed to give people hope and to be able to pass words on to other people that they can have greater responsibility for their lives.
And that, my friend, is what we're going to end on. That is Weltonisms, Ancient Wisdom for Modern Problems. Welton James, my guest today. And buddy, we got to have you back up. Thank you for being here. And friends, thank you for joining us as well. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.